Thank you very much indeed. Yes, my input is carrying the title of New Art, New World, Old Fears, because basically my input is based on two of my main research areas and my personal experience. So for 20 years, mind you, I have been intensively dealing very much with the defensive currents and enmities against the state Bauhaus, with the aesthetic, ideological, and political intentions of both Bauhaus supporters and Bauhaus opponents. In addition, I'm dealing with new religious concepts and trends in society that have emerged since about the 1800s, whose inhabitants try to escape the so-called transcendental homelessness. That's a term by Georg Lukács, above all by modern, well-educated people, not least intellectuals and artists. For it is only one component of the social myth of modernity that in our scientific technical world, religions or other promises of transcendence would become superfluous in the long term. So starting in 2014, I facilitated dozens of citizens' meetings and panels in Dresden and Saxony on questions of migration, so-called refugee crisis, and the related intellectual and political upheavals in our immigration society. If one listened carefully to the people, you were confronted with forms of pronounced social insecurity, the longing for order, security, community, and happiness, which is what Erich Fromm had already interpreted in the 1920s to be fear of freedom. So today I will try to take a look at the Bauhaus and politics, which could open a bridge to our present. So why was the Bauhaus so irritating for many at the time? What unspoken rules of the art and culture industry, of the mainstream and politics and culture, did the legendary art school violate? So why do avant-garde art practices remain an irritating nuisance to this very day? And why is the conviction that art is apolitical, that it must be apolitical, so tenaciously embedded in the souls of many of our contemporary fellows? So I am therefore concerned with the connection between art practice and the search for social meaning, with the desire for cultural identity in times of crisis, unpredictable and frightening social change. So finally, then also the question of whether and how classical modernity and postmodernity resemble each other, but of course are not the same. So last preliminary remark, when one speaks of the Bauhaus, one must not forget its internal heterogeneity and the aesthetic difference in the personality and art of individual Bauhaus masters and students alike. We heard that before. The Bauhaus existed only as a legally constituted school, as a happy or distorted image, and today also as a do-it-yourself store. So in the following, I would like to outline a rough picture, rough indeed, but not containing any false information, which we will be able to differentiate later during our discussion. So conservative, German national, Weimar, educated citizens called the state Bauhaus, founded in 1919, the state garbage collection, and expressed the wish that no Munich-Schwabing neighborhood should be allowed in the city of classical culture, Weimar. After 1918, the word cultural Bolshevism became popular in the fight against the avant-garde, which people attempted to exclude from 1933 onwards as degenerate. Such stigmatization, built on older enmities, which one must be familiar with in view of Bauhaus history, enmities of the late 19th century against the then avant-garde. So it is important to actually note this history, and that a kind of national art consensus had emerged in the course of the rise and development of the German bourgeoisie. The narrowing of art, national identity, and the educated middle class, which saw itself as the most important administrator of the nation's cultural assets, was rooted in the conviction that art comes from the people, educates the people, elevates them above everyday life, and should be an expression of national greatness. Schiller's idea that it was beauty through which we could reach freedom, and that art was the essential medium of the self-improvement for every human being, but neither the market nor politics had lingered on in the cultural memory of the empire in a different form. The European ambit of the German classics had successively been lost with many educated people, and the fiction of purely German art and culture prevailed. Another influential idea came from Richard Wagner, namely that it is reserved for art to save the core of religion in times where people tend to feel a greater distance to church and Christianity and live in a society that is fragmented. The other evangelist of art religion was Friedrich Nietzsche, who, however, turned less to Germanic heaven, the Germanic heaven of gods than to Mount Olympus. In short, many bourgeois art enthusiasts expected art to provide them with beauty, orientation, an expression of national greatness, and the elevation above the everyday life, in particular in a society that was rapidly industrialized, urbanized, politically and ideologically pluralized, and at the same time generated a lot of collateral damage in society. Then Impressionism entered Germany from the land of the arch enemy. It dissolved clear images into pointillist impressions, portrayed brothel and boudoir scenes, and was initially created less in art academies than in cafes and artists' houses. Naturalism went even further and showed the pitfalls in the affluent society of those years, described the misery of the proletariat and the double standards of citizens. Artists also put their work at the service of left-wing political ideas. This was not well received by conservative art aficionados, but also not by their many fellow artists who had dedicated themselves to the idea of law pour law, symbolism, or even decadence. So finally, the avant-garde around 1900 was a European international network, thus loosening the compelling connection between art and the nation for some artists and their bourgeois or proletarian admirers. And even worse, the educated bourgeoisie could no longer agree on an unambiguous connecting and thus communitizing concept of art. The fragmentation of society and the diversity of world views was reflected in the pluralism of styles and various isms, and the growing abstraction in the work of modern artists, the dissolution of form, or the unusual expansion of colors stood at odds with the need of many art viewers for a clear, unambiguous, and binding expression, where you can actually see what is on these pictures and paintings. So the First World War left no stone unturned in Europe in emotional, political, social, and aesthetic terms. The old Europe became yesterday's world, which gave hope to those who already wanted to create a new world, a new man, and a new community by means of the visual arts, design, and architecture. And those who wanted to be both avant-garde artists, but also explicitly political contemporaries. Habitually, many continued to refer to the old bohemian life to find themselves and to annoy the bourgeoisie. Although the Arbeitsrat für Kunst, the Bauhaus, or individual artist groups were also concerned with community in society, even with Volksgemeinschaft, a term used by all political camps after 1918 to refer to utopia, future, peace, and happiness. The cultural practice of the Republic's avant-garde met only with enthusiasm and support among a minority of the elite. The large part of the population did not understand all this. A majority in the conservative German national bourgeoisie did not want this. One only has to remember the West German art discussions of the 1950s or the dispute of formalism within early GDR times to realize that even after 1945, this was also not settled. Even today's canonization of modern art in museums, art pages, and in art studies sometimes deceives us. After all, it is still about the enthusiasm of an elite and the middle class that many of our fellow citizens do not share.
And we learned very recently that fish fillet in cream sauce, to cite the name of the famous punk band, is something you don't just consume in the Bauhaus, but also you can consume it in a brewhouse or a brewery. Now, don't worry, I'm not going to talk about one of the most interesting and indeed most controversial political punk bands of our days. And I'm not going to talk about the reaction of the Bauhaus in Dessau. Except I wouldn't, unlike the media, have described the cancelling of the concert as being pathetic. I would have said it was understandable or maybe wrong, maybe inappropriate, but calling it pathetic or disgraceful is something that attacks the person who's acted, not the action. this kind of negative labelling or stigmatisation of people is currently very popular, but it's something that damages our political culture across the board. So I'd like to say a few words about this art scandal involving punk populism, art and democracy, and what those who are opposed to this band, Fish Filet, and what those on the right wing are so upset about. It's well known that they play loud music with sometimes dramatic, sometimes wise texts addressing the complexity of politics and society in very simple terms, anti-bourgeois provocations and poses and political convictions that are not just about having a cool sound or about joie de vivre, a delight in love and being young, but actually about maintaining our open, disputatious and divided society. Fish, there's an implicit criticism of the status quo, which numerous contemporaries see as the dark days once again and are afraid of. Fish Filet's dream of community and happiness, however, has got very little to do with the notions of the collective that those who reject this music are opposed to. We find ourselves in an era of new complexity, Habermas, reflexive modernity, Ulrich Beck, or a society of angst, Heinz Buddha. Many people are desperate to find clarity, orientation and meaning. Wild, anarchistic art practices are very disruptive. Populism, racism, exclusion and xenophobia are on the rise because they make our worldview simpler and clearer. If you exclude others or draw a clear line between you and them, then you're trying to boost your own image. In this kind of context, addressing these kind of problems, art cannot be unpolitical. Even if we're looking at the intrinsic value of artistic practice and the freedom of artistic production, even allowing or banning events calls for discretion and for a fixed political standpoint. They will anyway be viewed as political decisions by the general public. To this extent, the old and indeed the new Bauhaus was and is always political, which is no problem as long as you stick to the rules of human rights and criminal law, and that applies for people on both sides of the divide, on left and right. Our freedom is certainly something we should be happy about. We're fortunate, but freedom always means that you're forced to take decisions. And hence, what Carl Valentin once said about art applies to it too. It's beautiful, but it does cause you a whole load of work. And I would say that also goes for our democracy as well. Thank you.